Today's cool fact of the day is poppies are known to represent the dead. That's because poppy plants only grow on disturbed ground, like you'd find in graveyards. Also, if you eat too many poppies, even on things like bagels, you can actually set off drug tests. However, you shouldn't be eating bagels anyway, so don't worry about it. Hey everyone, it's Dave Asprey with Bulletproof Radio. Today, we've got a pretty controversial guest. Her name is Carrie Rivera, and Carrie's director and founder of Autism O2, a hyperbaric clinic and the first and only biomed-based autism clinic in Latin America, actually in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. Carrie's a mother of two sons. Her 11-year-old is in recovery from autism, and she's translated a bunch of protocols from American English into Spanish and is working to take autism treatments from the U.S. to Latin America. The only thing is, the kind of treatments she works with are not normally recognized in the U.S., but it's a kind of treatment that I'm familiar with. So, Carrie, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you talk about how this technology works and how maybe even people who don't have autism could use it.
Exactly. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's just jump right into it. What do you do for autism? Because it's supposed to be an incurable disease.
Right. Well, I guess we should probably start off with the fact that my son was diagnosed in 2004 with autism. Okay. And so then that began my biomedical journey to knowing to start to heal my son. One of the big things was diet, and he did well with that. And then we kind of, you know, marched on and we tried everything. It was kind of like the boat with the whale watchers. You know, everyone's running to one side doing B12 shots and running the other side doing IV chelation. And so we did all that. We ran back and forth. And basically us, like most of the other people that were running back and forth, didn't really see much of anything as far as improvements were concerned. So time went on and on and on. And we visited many doctors throughout the United States. And, you know, he inched along. Diet was always big for us. Hyperbarics was really big for us. But still, we were missing a big, I mean, he was really still pretty impacted. And
so,
then,
how old was your son when you figured out he had autism?
When I finally got a diagnosis in Mexico back in the day, there wasn't a lot of any of this sort of thing going around 2002 when he actually got sick with it. So it was hard to find a diagnosis. And everybody kept saying that, well, he's bilingual and he was a baby of the family and he was spoiled, or, you know, they kept saying other things. But my son dramatically changed at the age of two. He was very dramatic. 2 years, one day, changed. So, you know, something was wrong, but we didn't know what happened. And so we're kind of going along and they're saying terrible twos. And then that was, you know, terrible threes. And, you know, it just kind of went like that. Yeah, it was not wonderful. But then there was a neuropsychologist who came down as a visitor to the director of the school where my sons were going to school. And the director said, you know, I have this woman here, and she's a neuropsychologist, and I'd like her to meet with you. And so I thought, oh, okay. But, you know, I knew that my younger son was fine because everybody told me he was just spoiled. And that's the one that actually ended up with autism diagnosis. And so we sat down and talked, and we were talking. I thought we were going to talk about my older son, who hadn't slept in 2 years because his brother hadn't stopped crying all night long. And so she kept focusing on my younger son, Patrick. And she's like, does he always run around in circles? Yeah. Does he always flap his, you know, his hands? Does he always squeal like a dolphin? Yes, yes. And, you know, asked all the standard questions. Does he not point with his finger? No, he doesn't point with his finger. Does he have any eye contact? No. Well, anyway, she said, well, I told her, well, I went to everybody, all these, you know, specialists, and everyone told me he was fine. And she said, I can't believe they didn't tell you your son has autism. That's verbatim. I'll never forget those words. And that was a real destructive moment. My whole world collapsed. But then I asked her, I said, you know, is it possible that she could be wrong? And she said, no. Well, she said, yeah, it's possible. But she was in, she had done her postgraduate in autism, and she had seen hundreds of cases of autism. So that said, she basically led me to these psychologists. I said, what do you do? And she said, well, tomorrow I'll come to, you know, this place and I'll introduce you to these people. And I saw these two women, you know, like deer in the headlights, like didn't know what to do. And they were going to help me save the day. And I knew this was not for me. But I went to pick up my older son who had been with my girlfriends. And one of them said, oh, I have a book. It's about a diet for ADD, ADHD, and autism. And I said, oh, great. So I read the book. Within 36 hours, his book was read. And I realized that my son he was eating everything wrong. So literally the only things that he was eating that weren't with gluten or casein or sugar or, you know, something really bad were French fries. And as bad as French fries are, that was the only thing that was legal. A potato was actually still legal on the gluten-free, casein-free diet. So that was what we started with, plates of potatoes. I know, I'm not telling you this is nutritious. All I'm saying is basically what we were looking for was something that wasn't going to cause the allergies and the inflammation.
The first thing that happened is you were blindsided by this information, and then you sort of stumbled across the idea that what you eat may affect the mental state, especially for people on the spectrum.
Right,
And you eliminated some of the potential toxins from the diet.
All of them. We took them all out. Okay. We took everything out. I mean, this kid had breakfast, lunch, and dinner fries because he wouldn't look at chicken. He wouldn't look at fish. He wouldn't look at fruit, nothing.
Right.
He had completely reduced his diet down to everything that was gluten and casein. So all he was eating was quesadillas. I mean, he had the worst diet by the time we finally figured out what was going
on.
You
were living in Mexico where, you know, there's quesadillas are a very standard kids food. You've now eliminated many of these things except fries, which have oils that may not be good for autism and have potato lectins and other things.
Right.
Now, this is the beginning of your journey into understanding biomedical stuff because you were basically kind of ignorant at the beginning of the process. You just didn't know, right?
Didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, because honestly, who teaches parents how to feed their kids to not get autism? Right. Although, funny, I wrote a book about what to eat during pregnancy to reduce the odds of autism. But
Interesting. That's a good thing.
So, from there, though, you went down this path. That was about,
2004.
Right, so it was about 9 years ago. And in 9 years, you've become sort of a self-educated expert on what to do with feeding and caring for an autistic child. And the reason I invited you on the show today is that in addition to nutritional interventions, which I know can work wonders, I have family members who've, you know, left their jobs to take care of children with autism and reversed it to the point their kids are neurotypical after, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars and masses of interventions. But you went down a path of using something called chlorine dioxide.
Right. Well, I don't know. This is a little bit out there. But anyway, by 2010, my clinic had been open and we were helping kids and there was IV chelation and ozone and hyperbarics and tons of supplements and everything. And, you know, kids were getting better. But it was, you know, like you're saying, hundreds of thousands of dollars. So this was like thousands of dollars, at least for these families who only, you know, maybe made hundreds of dollars in income. So it was a very taxing thing. And I really started to think that, you know, if this is what this Defeat Autism Now biomedical intervention thing is, that I don't think I really want to be telling people about this. So I was with my own issues at the time thinking, you know, what do I do? Because now, you know, we're helping people. We've established this clinic. People are coming from all over Latin America and actually Canada and the U.S. as well, people were coming from. And I really wasn't too certain that I wanted to keep doing it because we weren't having the recoveries, you know? That was kind of a big issue.
Are you a licensed physician or how did you open a clinic?
I'm a homeopath.
Oh, you are a homeopath. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and we had doctors, actually I had a hyperbaric specialist doctor in my clinic. I had an IV nurse. I had doctors that came down from the States that we used their protocols,
so
things like that.
You assembled a clinic with a bunch of professionals who
used
some kind of advanced techniques. And now people listening, you may be going, well, why do we have an autism specialist on the show? Here's the thing. Hyperbaric oxygen, one of the things that Carrie uses for autistic kids. Do professional athletes use hyperbaric oxygen chambers to recover faster?
Absolutely.
They do. And in fact, it turns out that if you want to build resilience in any human being, look at what works on autistic kids, which are some of the most delicate nervous systems and immune systems on the planet. And if you can make an autistic child become more resilient and more able to function in the world that we live in, those techniques oftentimes work well for neurotypical people to improve their performance and wellness. And certainly in my own experience, having had symptoms of Asperger's till my mid-20s and ADHD and not having that stuff anymore, I know very well that these things work. And how I've built my own resilience involves some of the techniques that you used at your clinic down there, even though you're using them for bringing people back to normal. Now looking at what do you do to take people and move them even further ahead.
And also autism, these children are born neurotypical. I mean, they're absolutely fine. My child hit every single milestone. He was substantially brighter than his brother. And then something happens. There's something that happens. They change. But they change usually between 6 months and 24 months. So even if your viewers are younger people and they maybe don't have kids or maybe they're going to have kids or maybe they're in this child thing, One in 30 boys is getting autism, or one in three are on the autism spectrum, meaning asthma, allergy, autism, ADD, ADHD. So it's a wide spectrum, and the healing all begins with the first step, obviously being the diet, because that's the first step for any kind of healing. But I think it does, you know, especially it's one in 50 when you include girls, because it's less common in girls. But still, just the same, it's very common right now in our society. So at some point, it might not be your child, God willing, it's not your child, but you know, there's a nephew, there's a niece, there's somebody usually somewhere in the vicinity, and then it's nice to be able to say, hey, there's this woman on the Dave show, you know, it might be a good thing.
There are about 100 to maybe 150 million people with autoimmune conditions in the U.S., according to some of the research I've seen. And autism is one of the conditions of autoimmunity that particularly affects the brain and the gut. So the fact that you may not have autism if you have rheumatoid arthritis, funny, there are some commonalities between what your immune system is doing in those conditions.
You know what's been interesting, Dave, to me, is that I have a lot of parents that do the protocol at the same time as their children. Like they do step one diet, step two, the chlorine dioxide and the ocean water, step three, the parasite protocol. And many of my parents have been diagnosed with Lyme, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and actually go on to go into remission in these things when they actually treat themselves at the same time, speaking of autoimmune disorders. So autism, like cancer, is an autoimmune disorder. So these disorders tend to get better when you treat them similarly. It's been very interesting to me.
So you mentioned a few interesting things. Okay, chlorine dioxide, which you know, the FDA totally rejects, like you're making a dangerous bleach.
Love chlorine dioxide. Sorry, Dave. If you go into FDA.org, because I've done this, and you put in chlorine dioxide, it will tell you that it's one of the best biofilm dissolvers, which will have the biofilm in our gut, which has all the virus and bacteria, candida, parasites, and heavy metals in it. So it dissolves that. Doesn't dissolve the gut, but it dissolves that. And it also is it's a very good antimicrobial. And the FDA actually has a lot of patents that have chlorine dioxide in it. And there's many, many patents. I mean, dozens of patents, which is also quite interesting to know that if you call it chlorine dioxide, which is really what it is, and it's from a family of oxidizers like oxygen, hyperbarics, ozone therapy, hydrogen peroxide, and chlorine dioxide, they're all from the same family of oxidizers.
And by the way, I've done pretty much everything there. Years ago, I tried.
Me too, yeah.
I tried sodium hypochlorite for a little while. Didn't necessarily notice a giant difference compared to some of the other things I did. But it's interesting. If you go to some of the FDA pages, they're saying it makes a dangerous bleach. And other ones, they say that it's good. I'm just looking as we speak to find.
If you put MMS in there, because that was the name that Jim Humble gave it. If you put MMS in there, that's when it talks about how bad it is. But if you put chlorine dioxide in there, it's actually quite a favorite because they use it in the slaughterhouses on the fruits and vegetables. So it's actually in municipal water supplies as well.
So it's basically the kind of bleach that you would use to disinfect things to break up biofilms outside the human body?
It's not a bleach. It does bleach just like lime and sun bleach, but they're not actually bleaches. Okay. They're oxidizers.
Why is there a use for this stuff inside the human body? Like, how does it work?
It actually is a simple oxidizer. So what it does is it's a positively charged molecule, just like our healthy cells are. So they're repelled. That's why it doesn't do any damage to the body. And within 60 minutes, its entire activity has ended. So you don't actually go accumulating it. And at the end of the 60 minutes, you have about a couple grains of table salt. That's it.
Okay. So this is an oxidizer. You put it in water. You drink it. It doesn't oxidize your cells. It oxidizes intracellular fluid intercellular fluid between the cells, right? It basically kills stuff that shouldn't be in the body.
It kills pathogens because it has, the body has a charge of 1.28 to 1.30, just like hyperbarics or oxygen O2. It has the same. So that's why you can, you know, you can use hyperbarics, but you can't do too many. You can just do the right amount. But with chlorine dioxide, because it's a 0.95 voltage is the measurement on the oxidizers, so it's much lower than the actual body. So you can actually take it. We do oral, rectal, vaginal, ear, eye, nose, basically skin for baths.
You're talking about ozone or you're talking about the sodium?
Chlorine dioxide.
Chlorine dioxide.
No, the chlorine dioxide. Chlorine dioxide. The ozone actually has a higher voltage than oxygen, and that's why you really have to watch. You know, you have to go with a professional who knows how to use it because they have to use a certain setting.
Okay. So basically and this is in a liquid form when you're giving it to them?
Correct.
Okay.
Liquid.
And so you dilute it in water until it's what pH?
You just allude to it's drop per drop.
Okay, got it, you.
It's drop to drop. Yeah, so we're always using, for every one drop that's been activated, you use 1 ounce of water. So it always has the same 3,000 parts per million, but you're still always with the same dilution. You know, like water, there was a radio show about 8 months ago where somebody had to drink so much water, and of course, this compensation, the person died. So you always want everything to be in the proportion, whether it's just drinking water or chlorine dioxide or anything else that we use.
Okay, and so how do we know what proportions work for, treating, I'm guessing, what would you call the things that are killed or removed from chlorine
pathogens,
dioxide?
Just pathogens and parasites, right. So okay. For instance, with the protocol, what we've been seeing, we have 108 children who have, between the ages of 2 and 17, who have lost their autism diagnosis using this protocol over the last 3.3 years. So the results have been very interesting, and there's actually a number of doctors that are looking this way and are interested in what we're doing and actually support to a certain amount because they can't lose their license or they won't be able to feed their families.
This is very controversial stuff, and I've known a few physicians who've embraced early therapies and lost their licenses or had to move to another state with more lax rules. It's not even about laws. It's about privately controlled medical boards who are basically deciding whether or not you're allowed to treat someone with something that works or doesn't work. It's more about like whether your friends do it. Is it a cool treatment? I'm a little confused about the mechanism of action. How does chlorine dioxide reverse autism there? Is it just because the argument is that autism is caused by like pathogens, which we haven't defined that well. Like what is a pathogen? Can you name three pathogens?
Yes, I can. Virus, bacteria, candida. Okay. And then the largest pathogen is a parasite. And parasites are a little bit more tricky to kill, but the chlorine dioxide weakens the parasite. So actually when we use the parasite protocol created by Dr. Andreas Kalker, that parasite protocol, which is non-systemic, goes ahead and kills the parasites. And we're getting everything from the ropeworm, the Ascaris lumbricoidae, the pinworm. We're getting flukes. We're seeing all kinds of parasites coming out of these people, children and their parents. Okay.
So in your experience running the clinic, the number one contributor to autism and ADD and things like that are kind of on the spectrum would be parasites, not yeast?
Pathogens. No, all pathogens, because they're all in there together. There's this biofilm of virus, bacteria, candida, parasites, heavy metals. All this is causing inflammation. All that's causing allergies. We have this dysbiosis in the intestine. We have the leaky gut. So it's taking all these semi-digested proteins to the brain, causing inflammation. There's so many things going wrong at one time. But as we start to kill down the pathogens in the gut, then all of a sudden we're having less proteins going to the blood, going to the brain. We're having a lot more clarity with the children. So pretty quickly they start to turn around.
Okay. So then you use this stuff, which using oxidizers or oxidative medicine, as you could call it, can be profound both for healthy people as well as people who are really dealing with big issues.
Right.
I've used a ton of medical ozone. I've used hyperbaric oxygen chambers. I've used hydrogen peroxide intravenously, believe it or not. A lot of people listening to this will be like, what? But here's the thing.
So many people do it.
There's definitely antimicrobial effects from these things, but there's also an effect where you train the cells in the body, just like lifting weights. When you briefly expose them to a lot of oxidative stress, they turn on their production of something called SOD, and they also turn on their production of glutathione, which is something that people have heard me talk about a lot because I make a specific kind of glutathione that raises your levels in the body very quickly and very high using an oral form. So one of the things you can do to increase your athletic performance or increase your ability to even meditate is raise glutathione levels. So occasional oxidative stress to give your cells a workout can have beneficial effects outside of antimicrobial effects. Do you think that's a part of what's helping people with autism when they use oxidative therapies?
You know what's fascinating to me is when I see the children, when they start working with me, most of all of them have done tons of labs, which the labs, they're not always so wonderful. So, but you see these kids and they're sick, they've got the eosinophils, they have, they have low iron. I mean, these kids are really sick. Everything is just messed up on them. And then I see a lot of these kids who are still working with doctors in these, for instance, in the United States, a lot of them have a primary biomedical doctor in the U.S., and they're running their tests. And like, for instance, one mom, her son recovered back in March of this year, And she was saying that she went to the doctor and he said that the lab results were boring because there was nothing wrong with him. He was really healthy. He's really fine. And he had pizza for his birthday this summer. You know, like this child has recovered from autism. He's just leading the neurotypical dream life, you know, and the families, I don't even hear from them anymore. I mean, once in a blue moon, just a, hey, how's it going photo of the birthday party kind of thing, but they're fine. So,
I mean, these are some huge claims because the typical Western physician, maybe non-integrative, will say we don't know what causes autism and there is no cure. And you have to you do cognitive behavioral therapy and all that stuff. Now, I know very well because I've seen it. I've done work with autism nonprofits. I know that mold toxins have actually, even a California court has admitted that mold toxins cause autism. Not the sole cause. They're just one of the many things that can trigger your immune system to go bonkers. Now, I'll get a little personal here. I've pooped in a lot of bags over the years for lab tests, right? Parasite measurement is such an imprecise science. Oh. You can have them throughout your body and poop in a bag and they don't find it because they're looking at it like sorting. Literally, there's a guy whose job it is to sort through your poop under a microscope and look, oh, that looks pretty. You know, that must be a worm kind of thing. It's very imprecise. And it's a little better than that. But honestly, visual inspection still matters.
So, absolutely.
How do you know that these kids have parasites, especially all these different forms, and how do you know they're gone?
Well, we start treating with the parasite protocol. So the chlorine dioxide, let me just start back. So the second diet is the first step. Yeah. Number two step is ocean water and chlorine dioxide. I've had children take ocean water. Parasites do not like ocean water, by the way. And they've been so infested in the gut that they've taken ocean water orally, and out the other end has come what looks like angel hair pasta. Because they had so many pinworms in the rectum, just on the inside, that all of a sudden all these pinworms came right out. I've seen that happen before.
So they're just drinking like ocean water from the beach?
Yeah, usually they'll get certain labels that have been cold filtered and they're from a vortex. So there's different types of ocean water. But the point being, it can be from the ocean water that you can start seeing the parasites, or when they start drinking the chlorine dioxide, that some of these parasites will come out. And then, of course, once we start the parasite protocol, that's when we start to see the majority of them, because you're actually giving them something to kill them, and that's going to drive them out. But the chlorine dioxide definitely weakens the parasites. And so when they come out, most of my moms are, they're real hands-on. There's thousands of these people in 52 different countries. They're my heroes. Every day they're there healing their children. And they will take... there's toilet hats that you can get that actually fit into the commode underneath the seat so the children don't feel them. But then they can collect and they can sift through, like you were talking about. And they usually put hot water on it, or you can use a colander. And obviously, this stuff doesn't get reused in the kitchen. So they put hot water on it, and what's remaining, the stool will fall through, but what's remaining are the parasites, and they have the same form. The parasites or flukes or the pinworms, but they resist the hot water. And if it was mucus, because I had a doctor say to me, well, there's a lot of mucus in there. The mucus dissolves really quickly, even with cold water, and with hot water even faster. But the parasites, because they're a protein, they just stick around. And so the parents will stretch them out and take photos and share it on other social media groups, just to, kind of helping us all get along. And so when you say, how do you know that they, what happens when you get rid of the parasites? We see these children get better with basically every full moon protocol. We treat over the full moon. And we also take something called an ATEC, which is Autism Treatment Evaluation Checklist. It's available for free at autism.com. And you can fill it out. You can fill it out daily if you wanted it. Again, you just kind of fill in the information about your child and ask you a bunch of questions, the physicals and emotionals and all kinds of things.
All right.
But anyway, when you have it, it kind of gives us an idea of how we're doing. And of course, everybody around this child is saying, oh my gosh, he's doing this and she's doing that and they're doing really well. And so the grandparents are noticing and, life is changing in the house. So as these parasites are being passed, this child's environment is a lot better.
All right. Now I have to ask you a couple of questions here. So far, you've mentioned drinking ocean water, which everyone knows makes you want to throw up. And if you're on a life raft and you drink ocean water, you don't do very well because you start to hallucinate, right? And you've mentioned vortexes and full moons. So I think you might have just tilted the skeptical meter pretty far here. Okay.
Let's go. Well, we still have 108 children who have lost their diagnosis. So I think that whether it's a skepticism or not, this still we're proving it every day.
I totally understand stuff works and there's reasons we don't know why it works, but I want to dig in a little bit on, and I'm not denying the results at all. I've seen amazing stuff happen with autism where it's not supposed to be reversible. And I know kids who've had dramatic results. I saw one child who wasn't even on the right diet, who went in 6 weeks of just brain training, went from running in circles, flapping and screaming at the top of his lungs, like running in a circle around me. And all of a sudden, 6 weeks later, walked up, "Hi, my name is so-and-so. How are you?" Like complete transformations in short periods of time. I know it's possible in my own experience of losing all of my Asperger's symptoms over the course of about 3 months, at least losing most of them and losing the others over the next couple of years. So I totally get it. There's kids getting better, and I've worked with moms directly. So number one, why do you drink ocean water? Like, what's in it that's different than salt water?
Minerals. Well, it's a balance. That's it. So for instance, we might use 5 milliliters of ocean water for getting the minerals into the body three times a day, or 10 milliliters of ocean water. And actually, there's quite a bit of information at ketone.com. Ketone, Rene Ketone, is the man who used to do IVs with ocean water back in the early 1900s and cure people of all kinds of gut disorders and wasting and all kinds of things like that.
How do you spell his name?
Ketone, Q-U-I... N-T-O-N, Ketone, Rene, R-E-N-E-E.
All right, I'll put a link in the show notes if people want to see that. This is not someone I've ever heard of. There's definitely people who do unusual things with ocean water, even taking ocean water and putting it in concentrated forms of it, even in farmland, and having just dramatic changes in the crop yields. So there's interesting compounds, including like precious metals in ocean water that oftentimes we're not that aware of. So let's kind of just stipulate, all right, so there's something good in ocean water that people have used historically. It depends probably on where the ocean water's from and whether it's from Japan or not.
Or right.
But,
right. Yeah, okay. That's not going to happen.
And then you mentioned full moon. Why do you treat on a full moon cycle? Like what?
The parasites are typically more active during full moon and new moon. So if you go into Google and you Google full moon and new moon for the month, and then you put them in your calendar, and you start to look at how you road rage. Does somebody really just piss you off because they cut you off? Or like all of a sudden you're less tolerant of other human beings, that kind of thing. Does your stomach get more bloated around that time? Do you wake between 1 and 3 in the morning, nose picking, butt itching? Things of that nature with the full moon and the new moon are very common. And that really tells you that you do have parasites. And most of us have parasites. You know, the idea is that if you live in a first world country, you're not going to have parasites. But actually, almost all these kids do live in first world countries, and they're pouring parasites out of their bodies.
So for people who are skeptical about the full moon thing, because, you know, obviously only witches care about that, there is any police officer or emergency room physician, by the way, I'm married to a former emergency room physician, will tell you full out that things are different on a full moon. And if you look at admission records for jails or for hospitals on a moon cycle, there's no question that there's something different for humans around a full moon, whether it's because of the effect on not just parasites, but even bacteria of a full moon. There are effects. There's a monthly cycle for all the biological parts in the body. So I totally get that. And you found that by treating on the full moon cycle, when they're most active, you try and poison them. Is that kind of how it works?
Basically, yes. Right. And they histamine, morphine, and amphetamine. So they're really toxic, these parasites. And another thing, when we got rid of these parasites in a lot of the kids, they started growing. A lot of our kids just kind of have stunted growth. And the thinking is that the parasites are eating the growth hormone. So once you start to kill down the parasites and the children start recovering, their feet grow, they get taller, they fill in, they go through puberty. Lots of interesting things happen as well. It's been a lot of interesting observations that we've seen.
Do you ever work with people, like, I guess parents would be the most likely ones, where you're doing the same thing, and even though they don't have overt autism symptoms, like, what changes in a parent if a parent drinks ocean water and on the full moon cycle? I don't want to know the other parts of the protocol, but what happens to neurotypical people when they do all this stuff?
Well, a lot of my parents have autoimmune disorders because they have children with autism. A lot of them have Lyme, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, hypothyroidism. A lot of them come with some issues of their own. So a lot of them treat at the same time, and a lot of them lose the symptoms that of the diagnosis that they had prior to treating with, you know, the diet, the chlorine dioxide, the ocean water, and the parasite protocol. That's basically all the parents will do. They don't do supplements or hyperbarics, but they'll usually typically do those first three steps, and they get better from those things. So that's been an interesting observation as well.
What about the people who take parasites to get rid of autism?
They're different types of parasites. They're not the same. But they're a different type.
They're a different type, right? So how do you, I mean, are you doing any kind of analysis of the things that come out to know what species and type they are? I'm just like,
labs don't find them, you know, Dave. So the labs aren't going to help you much. You know, people, they always come saying, my kids don't have parasites. Here's my labs. And we say, okay, you know, great. Just get started with this parasite protocol. And all of a sudden, all these worms are coming out and the parents are crying. And saying, I can't believe I didn't know this. I can't believe that they didn't tell me that my child had parasites. You know, how long could my child have stayed sick if I hadn't actually known this?
I totally agree. Labs don't find parasites a great amount of the time. And I think in alternative healing circles, that's pretty well known. On the other hand, if you have a bag full of angel hair pasta looking stuff, anyone with a microscope ought to be able to take a look at that and tell you what kind of worm it is, right?
If they used a microscope, Dave, they're not using microscopes. They're putting them through these machines and they're just looking for certain things and they're not finding them. So I don't know what's going on with those machines.
But in your clinic, you have access to basic, like, you know, USB style microscopes. You don't need high power to tell what kind of worms. Have you quantified or identified any of the species that are coming out of these kits?
Mostly what we're having is we have specialists, experts now, like, for instance, Dr. Alex Valinsky out of the South Florida University. He basically came across this rope parasite, as well as this Dr. Gubrev out of Russia. And they're kind of working together and they're checking to make sure, but there's a certain, and so he'll identify, I'll send him photos of those. And you can, they just look one after the other, look the same. Dr. Andreas Kalker as well helps us with identification. Miriam Carrasco has also helped us. And these are people that are specialists in the parasite world. So that's basically when the idea has come from. And then, of course, you can go back. There's books, actually, PDF files of some parents have started different Facebook groups, and they have a lot of files and books. You know, back into the early 1900s when, you know, we were more aware of parasites, but now we sort of think that we've got domination over that, and I think that we were missing it. This is a big piece of a lot of, a great example, a lot of people are suffering from depression right now in the U.S., and parasites cause depression. So I have one mom who was suffering depression so terribly, started the protocol with her son, is like, oh my gosh, I feel so much better. I can get up, I can get out, I can sleep through the night. And just basically only doing, she's doing the diet. Yeah, she is doing the diet. So she is doing step 1, 2, and 3, diet, ocean water, chlorine dioxide, and the parasite protocol.
So this guy, Dr. Andreas Kalker. Yeah, so he's a parasitologist and...
he's actually not a parasitologist. Okay. That's what he's basically started focusing in. His doctorate is in, it's biochemistry or...
Okay.
I don't know. I'd have to look it up what it is. But anyway, he gets really into everything. And this is something that he created, a really great parasite protocol that uses diatomaceous earth for chopping up the larva, castor oil for driving the parasites out of the liver, the flukes. And then he uses mebendazole, which is a non-systemic, over-the-counter, basically, in other countries except for the U.S., drug, which is it's supposedly quite good at getting rid of a certain type of cancer, and very, very cheap. It's worth about 50 cents a box. That's one of them. And rompepiedra, which is an herb that actually breaks up oxalates, which the parasite is responsible for.
So it's interesting that you bring up oxalates. It seems like eating kale would cause more oxalates than parasites.
Most of the people that have high oxalates are loaded with parasites. And as you get rid of the parasites, the oxalates come down. The parasites are responsible for the oxalates.
Interesting. I do know that nutritional sources can be big contributors as well. Just you can detect that, but I could totally see oxalates being produced by parasites to keep other parasites down, like as a defense mechanism. Now, in terms of just doing due diligence, there's Genesis Church too, and you and Dr. Kalker are involved in that. What's the role of that? Why is there a church relationship with all of the things we're doing here?
Well, Jim Humble created a church so that he wouldn't be attacked for using chlorine dioxide. That was to be protection for him.
And Jim Humble? We haven't talked about Jim yet.
Jim Humble is the man who 17 years ago used, he worked as a miner in South America in the jungle. And so before he would go into the jungle, he would go to one of those local camping supply stores and he would buy these two little bottles that if you put one with the other, you created chlorine dioxide and then you were able to cleanse your drinking water. So you could basically take undrinkable water and make it drinkable. So he's there in South America and some of the guys on the team get malaria. And so, you know, they're dying. They're just doing terrible. And so he thought, well, heck, this kills pathogens. You know, here's some drops for you. And he had no idea what he was doing. Just gave him a bunch of drops and knew that, you know, how much he was using per gallon. And about 4 hours later, these guys were laughing, talking about how bad they felt and how sick they were, and now they were fine. And then they started treating other guys in the neighboring towns and villages, and the same results were happening. They were killing, this chlorine dioxide was killing the malaria. So the people were being healed from malaria within about 4 to 6 hours.
Okay. So I'm familiar with Jim's work because about 15 years ago I read about it and I tried some of the stuff, and you know, but I've tried just about everything I know about. So I was like, interesting, tastes like bleach. The drinking ocean water is a new thing to me though. There's definitely some cool stuff in ocean water. I think the average person who hears all this is on one hand saying, well, if you have 108 kids whose parents will stand up and say, my kid doesn't have autism, here's all the diagnoses.
Yeah.
That's cool. We don't necessarily, it sounds like, have a great understanding of where in the body these parasites were, other than maybe in the gut. We also don't know exactly what species they are, and we're assuming that they probably, you know, were creating some compounds that were messing with the immune system. Is that kind of...
Sure. And the parasites are only one part, like you pointed out. The bacteria is definitely a factor. The candida is definitely a factor. There are heavy metals that are a factor. Chlorine dioxide will break the bond between like methyl mercury and ethyl mercury so that they'll just become compounds that can actually be removed from the body with the methylation cycle. So there are different things that the chlorine dioxide is doing. And, you know, it's not just the parasite, although we see the parasites coming out. So it's very impactful. And that becomes sort of the focus. But it's just, it's a part of it.
So do you think that people without huge health problems and autoimmunity are walking around with a parasitic load that's lowering their performance on a regular basis? Like, is this such an endemic problem that like everyone should deworm themselves?
A 1 in 4 women in the U.S. are taking antidepressant medications, which probably means there's more that aren't taking them that probably could use them. And probably a good round, you know, maybe like we do this year round, so it's every full moon for 12 months, probably would help most of these people. There's a lot of people that are suffering issues like this. I actually had a... After I did an interview with another person similar to what you're doing, I received a mail from the person who did the interview with me. It was a forward of a listener, and how he was so impacted. He was like about to divorce his wife. He was so depressed. He just didn't care. And then he started realizing, oh my gosh, after he listened to the interview, this was it. And he started to treat himself. And now he's in love with his wife and he's really happy. But all these emotions that we have that are caused by these parasites, I mean, yeah, of course we're having them, but these parasites are affecting our feelings. And so we're just, you know, we amplify things. Like I was saying about road rage, about intolerance for the spouse, or you know, depression when you really don't have anything necessarily to be depressed about. I mean, there's people that do, but still at the same time, there's a certain level of depression that kind of takes it over. And a lot of them are actually just, and especially if they're around full or new moon, I would urge anybody to really take a look at their, you know, their feelings around new and full moon, or their tummy, does it get bloated, or all the other symptoms.
There's very little question in the healing community that I've worked with that yeast and biofilms in the body have direct neurological things. One of the first signs that you might have, say, toxic mold in your home or a very severe yeast infection is like horrible nightmares. Like, why would you get dark, nasty nightmares if you're in a room that's full of mold spores? I have no idea. But there is a definite known connection between the compounds made by yeast and bacterial biofilms. And for people listening, if you haven't heard of a biofilm, this is what happens when you put some stress and or some chemicals around a fungus or bacteria or the combination of the two in the body, and they end up self-organizing. They make defensive systems, and they make even like almost like the equivalent of organs. They can pump nutrients in and they can pump out their waste products. And this makes them very resistant to things like antibiotics or antifungal medications. So using things like more traditionally, EDTA to break down a biofilm works very nicely. And what we're discussing today here is using this CD, chlorine dioxide, in order to break those down. So there's good science that says if you have a biofilm, and there's questions about who has them and when and where, but if you break down a biofilm and you actually have it, that it could have positive effects on your health. The techniques you're using are pretty far out there in the overall scheme of things, but it sounds like you're getting some good results with them. If people want to learn more about parasites, and without necessarily being alarmist about them, it's not like, I don't want anyone on the show today, oh my God, I might have a worm in my gut. That's so disgusting. I need to go out and like pump myself full of, and there's a lot of really harsh chemicals you can use in an attempt to rid yourself of something that labs don't detect very well. So you'll never quite know if it's gone. Like you can go down the psycho route looking for parasites. I know lots of people who've done that. Oh my God, I might have a parasite. I can't do anything. Where do we get sound, sane, but realistic and eyes open parasite advice?
There's only a few doctors that I know of in the U.S. that are practicing techniques to get rid of parasites. One of them is Dr. Dietrich Klinghart. He's up in Washington State.
Yeah.
There's Dr. Simon Yu, who is in St. Louis, Missouri. And there's a Dr. Schwartz, and I believe he's in Pennsylvania. But I don't know many other people that are actually actively realizing that this is a problem. And these are people who treat Lyme, cancer. I mean, they don't necessarily treat autism. I know that they've all seen autism patients, and I believe that they all treat autism. But they usually treat kind of a wide range of autoimmune disorders as well.
So I once shared a hotel room with Dr. Klinghart at the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, and I've been to his Mercury seminars, and he actually does a lot with Defeat Autism Yesterday. Now it's called Thrive. So yeah, he's into the Mercury connection. And the weird thing for people listening, and this gets into more of like the pathological stuff versus human performance, but the thing is, if you have mercury, which if you eat a lot of fish or basically you're alive, you tend to get exposed to it because there's a lot of environmental mercury that didn't used to be out there. As this stuff accumulates, your body's like, I can keep the mercury in the brain or in the liver where it does the most damage, or I can allow fungus to form and I can put this stuff into fat cells. So I can allow fat cells to grow and hold mercury, and you can biopsy the mercury or biopsy the fat cells and find the mercury, or yeast will hold on to mercury very well. So the body, in an attempt to keep from poisoning itself, will allow mercury to go into things that are also bad for you. So mercury is a foundational thing in making yeast and parasites worse. So you get this weird like toxins. When I talk about detoxing and toxins, this is one of those reasons. One toxin affects pathogens, things that grow in the body that you don't want. So we've talked about some pretty unusual techniques, you know, drinking ocean water and chlorine dioxide, which comes from mixing basically citric acid and chlorine.
Sodium chloride, and an acid. It can be vinegar.
Okay, cool. So you mix these things like, okay, this is one of the many treatment approaches there. But I would just say that it's entirely possible if you have some unusual symptoms that parasites can be involved. I don't think they're always involved. And it may just be a fungal thing. It may just be a bacterial thing, or it may be all three, and it may have a metal involved. But if you're dealing with heavy duty stuff, that's something to know about. But if you're also just a super high performance person and you want to stay that way, not exposing yourself to lots of mercury and lots of parasites and eating in such a way that you're less likely to get a fungal infection might keep you at your high performance level for longer. Any kind of final comments or bits of advice for people?
And I think is interesting too, I was just thinking when you were talking about this and it was sort of starting mainstream, and that's exciting because Dr. Oz, I'm not very familiar with him, but somebody sent me a video. It was a show he did within the last, I think, 2 months on parasites. And it was so interesting because he went through all kinds of symptoms that are affecting us on a daily basis. So if maybe your listeners are interested in parasites and they don't mind the mainstream, I think Dr. Oz would be a good video. And I think he's on YouTube. I think somebody posted on YouTube. So just kind of Dr. Oz parasites. And it just ran recently. It was very fascinating. And he just went through everything from headaches to, I mean, you name it, you know, definitely you start to think, geez, I might have some parasites.
One of the things that's interesting is I was a raw vegan for a while and I actually got worse. The number of raw vegetables that you eat there, and funny, raw vegetables typically carry parasite eggs, right? So the raw vegan community often says, oh no, only meat has parasites and you have to have meat to get parasites. But there's more parasites that come from eating raw vegetables than there are from eating meat. And they're different kinds of parasites, but
The larva is very hard to kill. Larva, you have to put boiling water, really hot, scalding hot water on it to kill the larva, or you need to use the 90 proof alcohol. So it's actually really difficult. And of course, you don't take your lettuce and dip it into, you know, scalding hot water if you want a nice fresh salad, and you're not going to pour alcohol on your lettuce either. So it's a tough thing to know how to kill larva. I actually think it's quite complicated.
It certainly is. So I've used an iodine soak, but the bottom line is if you are consuming vegetables in an effort to avoid parasites, it's a futile effort unless you're cooking the vegetables first, which works just as well as cooking meat. All right. There's a final question that I've asked every guest on the show, and one that I'd love to get your input on. Given your whole life experience, not just as a homeopath or working with autistic kids, but everything you've learned, what are the three most important things that you recommend for people who want to perform better? So if you wanted to kick more ass, you're talking to someone and you want to download those three things, what are the three things that you'd recommend people understand?
I think the most important thing, no matter what you do in life, is do it 100%. I think that, you know, if you do 90% or 99%, you're still going to end up the same way. You're not going to get where you're going. So decide you're going to do it and go ahead and go do it. And give yourself a period of time. I used to run marathons, and I know that, like, I just would tell myself, okay, you feel like you can't go on. You're like, okay, but just the next water stop or just the next water stop. And you kind of, you know, play with your brain. But it's the same thing whether we're healing ourselves, we're healing our children, or we've gone out to actually play a game. I think that that's really important. 100% of yourself.
Awesome. So that was one. What are the other two?
Yeah. The other thing is set yourself up for success. Prepare. Like with my families, I tell them, okay, look, now you know what's going on. You need to go start the diet. You got to go home. You know, your house is full of gluten in case it's all, we've got wheat and dairy and all kinds of junk in your house you need to get rid of. So go home, eat it all up. And the next time you go to the grocery store, buy all the stuff that you can have. So when your child comes to you and your child is hungry and wanting to have the sandwich or the milk or the cheese that they can't have anymore, you have something to offer them that is free of gluten and casein, but yet they like it as well. So that's another really important thing for setting ourselves up for success. And the other one is we need to do our homework. I think that no matter what it is, for instance, if you just go into the FDA and they say, with chlorine dioxide, bleach, whatever, but do the homework on both sides. And I think that that's an important thing for anybody considering any type of treatment or doing any kind of thing. There's always two sides. And you need to educate yourself. So it's not just like, I don't like people to come to me and say, oh, well, you told me and I trust you. Don't trust anybody. Get the information, educate yourself. And then when you say, oh, no, I want to do this protocol because I've done the homework. And then you're, you know, both spouses, everybody's done the homework. Everybody believes in what they're about to do. Then they can embark on a mission that's going to be successful. They're going to actually have a successful journey. But if it's just, oh, well, the FDA website said it, and then they throw it out the window, or Carrie said it, well, then you can always be derailed from your decision. So I think that that's one of the most important things too, that we absolutely know with certainty what we're about to do.
That makes really good sense. We've got kind of knowledge, preparation, and commitment.
Sure.
Would be the three things there. I appreciate that, Carrie, and I appreciate you being willing to do anything and everything and go out on a limb for your own kids. There's nothing like necessity to be the mother of invention, and you know, having progress and seeing, you know, your own kids get healthier is kind of a magic thing, and being able to help others is also magic. So you've definitely, you know, we've talked vortexes, full moons, parasites, and some pretty out there stuff. But if you're getting results and it's working for you, and there are communities of people who are trying it and trying it safely and not putting themselves or worse, their
kids in
danger.
Take the sickest children and they heal. So we have the 108 recoveries, and we have many more children that are well on their way to recovery, and they're healing along the way. So, you know, children that had seizure disorder are no longer having seizures, things like that. So yet they still have the autism diagnosis. But little by little, we're healing many people all over the globe. And thank God, you know, everyone is just doing better. It's not like they're getting worse or some are falling. You know, they're doing well.
Well, I'll do some more research into this ocean water thing. That's not something I'm familiar with, and usually I know about this stuff. So thank you very much for being on the show today and for talking about your work.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You do the same. Thank you.